knowing that using an addiction is a side effect, mm-hmm. you know, it's a symptom of something much bigger. So just quitting using whatever the substance is not the only thing you have to do. It's just a symptom of something larger you're dealing with in your life in that moment, or in the past rather. So identifying those traumas and dealing with them, I never realized that. It never stuck.
Welcome to Hope Peace Together, a podcast by Mosaics of Mercy. This is a show about mental health struggles and insights about how to overcome them through personal stories and professional insight.
Alrighty, well, today on the Hope Peace Together podcast, I am your host, Marissa, and we have in Bo sharing his story of help. So welcome on in, Bo. We are so glad to have you in.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I want to start with telling our listeners, maybe we should start with you telling them a little bit about yourself.
I am from Nacogdoches, Texas. Currently from Nacogdoches, Texas, 37. I have two small boys, 5 and 6 years old. Mm. And a clean date is September 9th, 2022.
Okay.
So just past my 6 months.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I wanted to start off. So you said clean date. Mm. So now you're going to tell us a little bit about your story. And my first question for you is, what inspired you to change?
So I've been using for quite a long time, upwards of 20 years, and it was pretty rough along the way. So what ultimately inspired my change was just the pain I was causing my loved ones and myself and my children most of all. I finally reached a point where I just couldn't do it anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's what initially drove my want to change. I just recently came across these seasons of change.
Okay.
So I thought it was pretty interesting.
Okay.
So I brought it. So there's four seasons of change, mm-hmm. four reasons people initially change, right? Mm-hmm. So they'll hurt enough that they have to. Mm. They see enough that they're inspired to. They learn enough that they want to, or they receive enough that they're able to. So for me, initially, it was to hurt. During my time of use, I tried to do as little damage as possible to my loved ones. You know, I isolated myself. I wasn't the kind of user that would like go steal a bunch of stuff from my parents, you know, nothing like that.
Okay.
But just by isolating, I was still hurting.
Yeah,
hurting
definitely. Everyone.
My using started at an early age.
Okay.
So I went through some sexual trauma when I was very young. And then when I was 8 is when I like started finding different ways to change the way that I feel. So that's like when I started stealing beer out of the fridge from my dad, you know, started smoking cigarettes at 8. That was just my way of like escaping, you know, the reality of what was going on and what was happening. Yeah.
That was you were trying to cope. You were trying to self-medicate for the things that you were going through.
Right. Exactly. And I was, totally unaware. I mean, you know, at that age, you don't really think of those types of things. So I was doing that. And once I was old enough to kind of, you know, I was a teenager and those types of things were more readily available.
Yeah.
So that's when I really started getting heavy into the using and stuff. And I never knew that I was using to cope with unresolved trauma. Mm. All those things were stuff that I buried, you know, I was just trying to escape feeling. Using for me never was one of those things that was like, let's party, have a good time.
Yeah.
It was more of a coping mechanism to not feel.
Yeah. I'm a big Brene Brown fan, and she says you can't selectively numb emotions. And when I learned that, it hit pretty hard because I was like, man, so you got to have the sunrise. If you want the sunrise, you're going to need the sunset. It has to wax and wane. So you're probably trying to mute those hard feelings, but probably accidentally isolating yourself and pulling yourself away from the happiness that you could have felt.
Exactly. Yeah. And by doing that, I was hurting everyone around me. And every new bit of trauma that would come up in my life, the points where you would think that would be like, all right, this is it for me. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm done with using, you know, all of the things. Instead of quitting, those were the moments that made me dive even deeper into addiction and use even more.
did you find yourself like maybe trying to learn from the experience, but you still were like, I need this to get through the day?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've learned so much just like in my short journey in recovery, just about how our brains work. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. So it's so people to piggyback off what you're saying, like people that deal with addiction, their brains, there's like a dopamine deficiency. They don't produce as much dopamine as, you know, an average person.
Yeah.
So once we start using, we get that dopamine hit and then our brain kicks in and it's like, wow, this is what it feels like to be normal. And then it reacts with the memory part of our brain and it tells it to remember this. This is what it, you know, this is what we're supposed to be feeling like. And this is what's giving us that feeling. And that's what gives us the vicious cycle, you know, of addiction. And that's what really aids it.
Yeah. Especially in conjunction with you saying that you started younger and your, you know, your prefrontal cortex is not fully developed.
Right.
And then if you don't have access to the coping skills and the mental health help, it can put other barriers. But it seems like as we get further along in your story, you're going to share with us like how you overcame those barriers.
Right. So I reached a point. So this final, like, I would call it an episode, I guess. I had gotten pulled over. I had my sons in the car with me, and I'm the only present parent for my sons.
Right? Okay.
So, got pulled over, and they were in the vehicle with me, and I had stuff in the car with me. So, CPS stepped in. They got put with their grandmother, and I had gone to jail, and that was the second time that they got put in foster care. So, at that point, I don't know what it's just the pain of the guilt and shame, you know, was so much that I was starting to question life. I was starting to question whether it was even worth it for me to be a part of their lives, you know, and it just drove me to reach out for help. Like, I didn't want to be that parent because my boys, I mean, like, I'm the only one they got, you know, and I didn't want to be that parent that just turned my back on them. I mean, I know first and foremost, I have to do it for me.
Yeah, you
know,
that's, of course.
Of course, but my sons are really the driving force that really got me to open my eyes to what I was doing to myself and the people around me.
Yeah. I found that it's interesting the way little kids can, especially when they look up to you and want to emulate you, they can kind of just echo you. And sometimes you see some, hopefully some great things, but sometimes you see some areas of improvement.
Right.
So it's good that they were your why to be like, man, I can't live like this anymore.
Yeah. I just got to be there for them. I mean, that, you know, I mean, every parent should have that feeling. As soon as I felt that, I knew I had to make a change. I knew it in my bones, you know. And I had to act immediately. I couldn't give myself time to think about it.
Yeah,
like, you know what I mean? It's like, because then I'm like, oh, well, maybe I can just do the, you know, use a little bit more and then I'll be a good, you know.
Yeah, I'll gradually take myself down.
Yeah, wean myself off or something like that. It, and that's the addiction working right back into it, you know.
Yeah.
So immediately, once I decided that I needed to change, I reached out immediately. I reached out to the people closest to me. And let them know. I just let them know everything. Let them know everything. What I was doing, you know, how I was doing it, things to look for whenever I'm using, just like, and let them know that I can't do this alone.
That moment of reaching out, like, that just kind of sends shivers through me. Like, that can be so difficult to own up to your own, like, hey, this is what you look for. This is how I'm struggling. What was that first call like?
It was terrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know how they're going to react, you know, because there's such a, you know, the stigma on addiction is just like, ugh, you know? So it's just, it's horrifying. But at the same time,
liberating.
Liberating, exactly. Yeah. So it took a huge weight off my shoulders in that moment of asking for help, you know, reaching out. And I was in bad shape. I mean, like living and breathing, the first step out of the 12-step program, you know, the powerlessness, you know, because although I knew I needed to change, I wanted to change, I didn't want that in my life anymore. Like I said, in all the other moments that something would happen and the using would get worse, this was just the same.
Okay.
When that happened, I got pulled over and went to jail and the kids, you know, went to their grandparents. That was no different from any other time. The using got worse. That was just the time that I decided to make the change. So even while I was reaching out for help, you know, calling local rehab centers for beds, I was still using in those moments. Mm-hmm. I couldn't, I was powerless over it.
It's probably like a physical aspect to it, but also when we go back to saying the coping, like you're doing something really hard. Every phone call probably was hard. Every no, even some yeses might have been hard thinking about, man, so I'm really doing this.
Right. Yeah. And it's just like survival mechanisms that we've built up, you know, early on in life that don't serve us anymore.
Yeah.
You know, that's basically what it was for me. The stress level is so high and I'm so used to just numbing it out.
Mm-hmm.
To not have to deal with it.
Yeah.
It was still ever present. You know, even though I wanted the change, I needed the change, I was still doing it.
Yeah.
But that was the one factor that tipped the scale for me. The one thing I did differently was reaching out for help.
Mm.
Crying out to the people that love me, the people that are there for me.
Yeah.
Just asking for help.
Mm.
That's all it was, just asking for help. And having those people willing to stand there by my side and not just let me continue the path of destruction I was on.
Yeah.
Helping me find a place to go. And luckily, Mosaics, y'all hooked me up with TLR, The Last Resort, where gentlemen recover over in Smithville.
Mm.
It was an incredible place.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I absolutely love that place. Real recovery is happening there. Because I've noticed there's a couple of different settings for recovery. Like, whenever you go to facilities, so there's like a clinical based where they just give you, you know what I mean? They taper you off with, you know, pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, medicine or something.
Okay. Yeah. And then there's like trauma based.
Mm.
Like TLR is one of the trauma based facilities where they address unresolved trauma in your life.
Yeah.
And that's where I learned that most people dealing with addiction have some type of unresolved trauma that they're having trouble dealing with. And it's just a coping mechanism.
Yeah. And the really cool thing about our brains is this concept of neuroplasticity and that you can learn and grow. So while you were there, you were probably learning all these different types of ways of dealing with trauma and you connected with people. You had your support at home and you had people who are walking the same walk as you.
Right. Exactly.
And the next question I have for you, and you've kind of maybe answered it, so maybe you'll reiterate it. But if someone is struggling right now, what do you want them to know?
First of all, just know that you're beautiful, you're loved, and you are worthy, definitely. And understand that recovery is possible, no matter how deep you are in the lifestyle of addiction and the disease, it's possible. It may be hard, you know, but nothing good in life comes easy.
Is true.
It takes work.
Yeah.
And especially now, it's so scary because from 2021 to 2022, there's an 89% rise in overdose due to fentanyl.
Oh, wow.
And most of the people don't even know they're getting it, you know? And it's like, because everybody, I mean, they're cutting all these different drugs with it now.
Oh, so they wouldn't know they're getting it because they're getting something, they're not getting what they ordered?
Right, basically. And it's getting laced. And then it's just, it takes one bad batch. And then that's it. And you're done. 89%, that's almost doubled in 1 year. So it's not the same, you know? So, I mean, reach out for help. That's all it takes. Want the change.
Yeah.
Like we were saying in the beginning, those four seasons, two out of those are something you actually have control over. You know, seeing enough that you're inspired to, or learning enough that you want to.
Mm.
You know, by going to meetings, that's where you see the recovery happening. You know, that's where you meet the people that are going to support you in this. You know, a lot of the rooms tell you, you know, because when you go in broken, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, most people are unable to love themselves. And those rooms, they'll love you until you can love yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where you really see the change happening. That's where the inspiration comes.
Yeah.
You know, and then learning just looks, you know, learn about recovery and what's happening in recovery and how, like for me, I had no idea. Now I'm learning all these different things about how our brain works
mm-hmm.
and how addiction plays into that. Like all those things are what's helping me in my recovery.
Mm.
Like learning how all this stuff works and just self-care.
Yeah.
You know, is a big part of it for me too.
Okay. There is this Japanese art, and I'm going to say it wrong. Maybe it's kintsu, but the big deal is the concept of brokenness. And with their pottery, when they would break it, sometimes they would put it back together with gold. And so that's how they rebuilt it, and it was so beautiful. And I thought, I like that, the beauty and the brokenness, the fact that, you might be, and we might be holding all the pieces together, but hopefully through the 12 steps, through the people you reach out to, through the education, through the remembering your why, you were able to piece it all back together.
Exactly.
Okay. So that brings me to another question. Our next question is like, what keeps you going on the hard days?
Definitely my kids, because like I said, I'm a single parent, so I have, you know, full-time the boys at home. So they keep me focused on, they keep me on the right path, just staying, you know, making sure they survive.
You know? And that's a whole job in itself.
It is. It is. And they're my anchor, right? So that, I mean, that's what I consider it, like just like an anchor point, because there's always going to be struggle. You know, we all have hard times. And whenever I start to struggle and I really start to feel it, you know, those moments where it's like right now is when I would normally be using. Instead of letting the thoughts of how using can help or what using did for me in those moments, replacing those thoughts with what I have to lose if I do use. You know what I mean? Just don't ever let my mind drift. I mean, vigilance plays a big role in it. Just keeping control of your thought, my thoughts, is what really helps me stay on track. Not ever glamorize or like drift off into what, you know, all the things I used to do when I was using or anything like that, you know. Think of all the things that I have to lose, you know, all the things that can go wrong, all the great things that are happening in my life right now, you know. Try to stay as positive as possible. Try to find all the silver lining in things. Because whenever my kids were initially taken, whenever I got arrested, you know, essentially that was the worst thing that ever happened to me.
I can understand,
But as I go, I'm starting to realize that it was actually the best thing that ever happened to me, because that was the cornerstone of my sobriety, you know, my recovery. That's what inspired me to change. So it's just finding the silver linings and things like that is what really keeps me going.
Okay. And I was thinking probably with replacing those thoughts and keeping your anchor and finding the silver lining, also maybe even proximity, like maybe not going to the same places or hanging around the same people.
I had to change up completely. My circle now is like super small. You know, it only consists of the people that support me you know, in my recovery. You know, so definitely.
I think anybody listening, no matter what they're struggling with, realizing, like you said, finding somebody to reach out to and help, and finding your why, your anchor, but also realizing the people and the company and what you're keeping. If they're very negative, like maybe we can turn this around. If they're users, can we support each other and we're all going to go through this together? I think that's something important to think about. Last question, unless we think of some more, is there anything you've learned through your journey that you think could help our listeners? Anything more, actually? You shared so much.
One of the big things that I learned, I kind of touched on earlier. Man, there's so many things. Knowing that using an addiction is a side effect. You know, it's a symptom of something much bigger. So just quitting using whatever the substance is not the only thing you have to do. It's just a symptom of something larger you're dealing with in your life in that moment, or in the past rather. So identifying those traumas and dealing with them, I never realized that, you know, because going through my life, I've tried to go to NA 100 times, you know, and it never stuck, you know, because I didn't even know what I was doing in there. But it was like when I got to TLR, is when it really came together for me. Like, they helped me understand what I was dealing with. It wasn't just a substance problem. There was a lot of unresolved trauma in my life that I've been burying for a long time. So it's knowing that quitting the substance is just part of the battle. You know, it's dealing with those unresolved traumas and changing your scenery. Surround yourself with positive people. And I mean, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Don't be scared to reach out for help.
Exactly. I love that because, yes, it's a, usually it can be a coping skill of the using. Mm-hmm. And unpacking the trauma, I'm very careful when I unpack trauma. Like, think of we're unpacking fine china. We have mm-hmm. to be careful with it. So it's great that you have the resources, and that be something that maybe we should encourage our listeners to do if they're dealing with this. Definitely start. And you talked about one of the seasons was learning. Mm-hmm. Was that the third season?
Yeah, learning enough to want to change.
Yeah. So you were collecting data and mm-hmm. you were learning and growing. So that's really important so you can find something else, another way to cope.
Right. Building coping skills, learning how to deal with trauma, not just past trauma, but trauma that's to come, you know, understanding how to deal with that in a proper, healthy way is a huge part of it.
Yeah. And especially with your boys being your anchor, I don't know about you, but sometimes I realize some of my past trauma from childhood is my stuff and I don't want to pass that on. That's not one of the gifts I want to pass on to my kiddos.
Yeah.
So I'll need to know my coping skills when they're in a large body of water. Something like my kids want to go out on the boat and I was like, I can't see the bottom. Like, how are you going to get in this lake? And I don't know what's down there.
You're doing that.
Yeah. Exactly. But I actually want them to. So
Yeah, I understand completely. Yeah. A therapy is a huge part of it. Therapy helps deal with those traumas, especially the boys are in therapy now just because I'm trying to figure out how to cut it off at the head. You know what I mean? I don't want to pass on, like you said, I don't want to pass on my demons to them like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like learning how to properly cope with it and deal with it is a key factor.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're well along your way. And I hope our listeners have learned something from you sharing your story. And also just going back to the four seasons, which I actually, you mind saying those one more time?
Yeah. It's when you hurt enough, you have to change. When you see enough, you're inspired to. When you learn enough that you want to, and when you receive enough that you're able to.
Yeah. Well, I think that I am definitely inspired by your story, and I appreciate you coming to share with us. And I think that is a good place for us to stop.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.